This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, and joining me remotely from an undisclosed location in Petaling Jaya is Roshan Kanesan. It is just gone past 6 a.m. in the morning. It's Tuesday, 22nd of December, and only three more days till Christmas. We're all getting very excited in the studio. I think we're all looking forward to this four-day work week, which should, by the case, be the norm. Not just this week, but every other week. What are you up to, though?
Oh man, I think I first want to just laud your phrase. I think that should be the way forward. I think 2021, this is going to what we're going to be lobbying, okay, Shaoning? You and me together, we're going to lobby for the four-day work week. But I'm looking forward to actually honestly just spending time with family over the weekend. It's a nice three-day weekend to be spending with family. We've got two three-day weekends coming up this week and the week after. We can't do the things we normally do, like, I don't know, like hang out in crowded places.
Or at least, huge parties, right?
Yeah. So at least we're personally just being a bit more cautious, right?
Yeah.
It'll be nice because it's that time of year where family comes together, and I'm really honestly looking forward to that.
Yeah, but I think you know what has already started, guys? It's the feasting. It's the eating. Because yesterday was winter solstice, and you know, because we can't hang out with each other as much, what I did see and I thought was very, very cute was everyone posted pictures of all their respective little rice balls, you know, the tong yun they call them. Mm. And people have come up with some really cute ones, like little cats, almost look like dragons. I give top notch to people trying to be innovative and inventive during this COVID-19 era. It doesn't stop us from, you know, trying to think of new ways to do old things. But like I say, the eating has begun, and I'm looking forward to the next few days of feasting. In fact, even in the office, our tables are just full of cookies, biscuits. We've had nice gifts from colleagues, from some of the companies. We're very grateful. It's very nice to be reminded that despite COVID-19, that despite the fact that we, you know, it is a new normal, there are many things to be still grateful for. But Roshan, what do we have on today?
Yes, so let's talk about the amazing show we have lined up, as we do every single day of the week, except for Friday, because we'll be off on Friday, which Woo-hoo! Is great. At 6:30, we take a look around the world, and today it's going to be a focus of vaccines, as I think it's been the last few days, right? We're going to talk about the UK, we're going to talk about Thailand, we're also going to talk about the first batch of COVID-19 vaccines arriving in Singapore, according to DHL. And Shaoning, you had a conversation with DHL not so long ago, so great thing to point out there. But as we get closer to about 10 minutes time, we're going to be talking about also vaccines, but the role of, I think, leaders and influencers in promoting it, and getting people a bit more accustomed to it, right?
Yeah.
We're seeing a lot of that starting to happen. That's going to be something we're going to discuss, and the importance of this kind of familiarity.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask what you want to leave behind in 2020. Very important. What you're done and dusted with, and you just want to get on with it. But as always, let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few minutes. But first, here's Great Southern Land by Ice House. This is The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Great Southern Land by Ice House. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, and of course, I'm joined by Roshan Kanesan today. It has just gone past 6:09 in the morning. It's Tuesday, 22nd of December. And right in front of me is this interesting article by a magazine that online thing that I wouldn't normally go to. So it's obviously been chosen by you, Roshan, because it's from Vice. And the article is true, it's a very valid one. It asks, everything you need to leave behind in 2020. So I think we've all had a rather unusual year. COVID-19 really came and surprised us all, changed the way we live, changed the way we work, changed everything, okay, in a blink of an eye. Before we knew it, we were all wearing masks. We all had to practice physical distancing. We couldn't travel. We shouldn't be in crowded places. And even the way we celebrate festivals has changed tremendously. But I think we've all kind of adapted to it. In a way, I wouldn't say embraced it, but learned to live with it. And I think come to peace with it. I'm not happy, but I've come to peace with it in the sense that I've like, okay, this is the new normal. Suck it up. It will be all right. But there are nonetheless some things I do want to leave behind. But let's start with you, Roshan. What do you want done and dusted?
One, right. But I would like to see, I don't know. I would like to see all these, the amount of politicking put behind us. But at the same time, I don't know. I'm not
never
keeping
gonna
my
happen.
Hopes up. Yeah, I'm not keeping my hopes happen. Up too much about that, because I mean it's something that's always been around, but I think this year we really saw it escalate because of history. It's now history, but whatever happened in March, right? Mm. The Sheraton move and things just being volatile the way they are. Because whatever's been done, it's just not good for the society and economy at large, right? Because of the uncertainty that overhangs everything we want to do going forward. Any big plans are always going to have this shadow hanging over it. It's at the back of our minds, we're going to be wondering, oh, with a slim majority, is there something going to change, blah, blah, blah. Oh, next year we're looking at possibly a general election. I would like that to put that behind us, but that's also a very unrealistic notion. I understand that very, very, very much so.
Yeah, I think it's going to continue. I mean, let's face it, as long as you have two politicians in a room, you'll have politicking. There's no denying it. But I guess your point is true in the sense that with so much of it going on, and yet there is this backdrop of economic uncertainty, unemployment, concerns over whether we are having enough resources for the healthcare sector, whether we're getting enough vaccines, are we getting them fast enough? Then you have politicians just politicking and you're wondering who's really focusing on the important issues then? Are we setting aside enough time and effort to really focus on what should be the key things? Rather than deciding who's in government, who's not in government. You know, I want to be in government, you want to be in government. And it seems like it's that everyone's distracted by the wrong things. So you're right, politicking is one thing I want to leave behind. The one thing I would like to leave behind, but which I know I'm not going to, sadly, and it's probably not going to happen to at least 2022, honestly, is masks, the virus, and hand sanitizers. I'm not saying don't do it. Don't get me wrong. We still need to have these standard operating procedures. It's very critical that you still wear your mask. It's still very critical that you sanitize your hands. But for me, if we can say goodbye to these three things, that means we've managed to overcome COVID-19. There is sufficient herd immunity within the society. We can carry on with our lives. And with that, we can perhaps travel once again. So those are the three things I want to see goodbye to in 2020. But I don't think it's also like politics. It's not going to happen.
But I think personally, what I would like to put behind me, or at least leave back in 2020. I think 2020 has shown us the volatility that can happen, right? And we're not saying that this is something that's going to happen every few years, but every once in a while, every once in a generation, you have a significant disruption to the way we do things. And I think I just generally would like to put this being hard on yourself behind, right? And this is something Vice mentions as well. I think a lot of stability that we've had, generally speaking, over the last 10 years has led to, I think, high expectations. And I think that can be a really big issue because this is the year to downgrade some of those expectations, you know. Mm. It's the year to be like, okay, if you survive the year, give yourself a pat on the back and a high five yourself, because that's a really big achievement, right? A lot of people have lost their jobs. A lot of people have other health concerns they have to worry about. I think that's something I would like to, because before that, it's always about, oh, need more, want to do more. What's the next thing I need to get done? Now it's about, all right, let's balance expectations and hopefully get through the year.
Yeah, it's like that little bit of reset that we all kind of need. Well, I think for me, the one sad thing that I had to leave behind in 2020, but I hope that I don't have to anymore in the future, is lipstick. Because with masks, I haven't really had the chance to wear it, and that's the frivolous me. But do let us know what you would really like to leave behind in 2020. Vice has some interesting suggestions like jeans, political polls, banana bread. So do chime in. Tell us what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have some messages. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Walk This Way by Aerosmith and Run DMC, which is, I think, what you need to do when the vaccines are available. Just walk this way to get it done. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and Roshan Gunnison. It's just gone past 6:20 in the morning. It's a Tuesday, the 22nd of December. And we are obviously going to be talking about vaccines a lot throughout the show because that's really what everybody's watching very closely. And this article from, I do believe, is from, what is it, Roshan? It's from Vox, another happening online portal, shall I call it that? Chosen by you, obviously.
It's from the
from
Recode
one
section.
Of the other producers, Sim.
Yes.
And it's entitled How Influencers Are Being Recruited to Promote COVID-19 Vaccine. Yeah, because we do know there's a bit of vaccine hesitancy. Some people are very vehemently against it. You know, you might want to call them the anti-vaxxers. But I think the key thing is to have the right information out there. We have to be transparent in terms of the efficacy, the possible side effects, you know, and then people can, you know, well, some countries, I presume, if you ask me, will probably make it compulsory. But for those who allow their citizens to make a choice, like, for example, UK, then I guess there's this need to communicate it and communicate it with clarity. And also so that people understand what is the reason for it, whether it is a social responsibility of theirs, so that there's sufficient herd immunity. But I think in that process, there is this question about how should we go about it?
Yeah, you know, because end of the day, you can have all the best information and things like that. But if your delivery channels aren't great and aren't targeted, then you're going to have an issue of dispersing that information. It's not going to the places that need to go, because there is going to be a phenomenon where you're preaching to the choir, essentially, right? What you need to do is find delivery mechanisms that reach out to different people. But also also beyond that, it's also just about leadership by example, right? We're starting to see a lot of, when we focus, look at America, the leaders, like, okay, Biden has taken his shot already. Barack Obama, some of the other former leaders are taking, including George Bush. And then over the weekend, over Instagram, I saw that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez also took the shot, right? And what she did was, she spoke on to her followers about that everyone, as part of government continuity planning, that everyone was taking the vaccine, right? So that they were rolling it out, and she was giving a very contextual way to a very contextual argument for it, right?
Okay.
So it's again about reaching out to people and showing them that it's not as scary as it is, and explaining why it's being done. And also just the methods of getting it done. Who is talking about it, right? Because what was really interesting about this article, Xiaoning, is that they mentioned that the Trump administration had a plan initially to use celebrities to talk about the vaccine. But this was pushed aside because it looked like it was also in line with Trump's re-election campaign. It didn't look great, lah, at the end of the day. But this is important, right? Because as you mentioned also, there is hesitancy. And sometimes having people that people trust talk about it, showing them taking the vaccine can help build trust towards it overall.
Yeah, I want to bring this back to a little bit of history because in the 1960s, when the polio vaccine came out, guess who did they use as the first celebrity to show that this vaccine worked? And it was a 21-year-old Elvis Presley, who turned up on the Ed Sullivan Show, which was the show in its day. The vaccine injected into his right arm, and then he went on to the stage and sang two songs. And after that, a lot of Americans took it. So I guess the point is, you know, if this model works, then it probably still works today. But I think what you mentioned earlier was very interesting in that that politician, she did it on Instagram, right? So now I think the point is to do it across different social media platforms and different, because there's just different ways we all get information out there, right? Whether it's on Facebook, whether it's on Instagram, whether it's on mainstream media, whether it's on mainstream TV. I think the message has to go out. It's like an omni-channel way of getting that kind of the benefits of the vaccine out to people so that everyone has a chance to read it, make that decision, and know a little bit more about it rather than, you know, just going through their own little echo chamber of anti-vaccine news. And that's sometimes the problem, right? Because you are in that little bubble. So it's important to, you know, keep an open mind and, you know, read up about it. So let us know what you think. Because I would say I'm very pro-vaccine. I want to get my life back together. Let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. If you see someone famous taking it, will you? Up next, we'll take a look. We'll be back after the news bulletin. But before that, Christmas Time Again by Lynyrd Skynyrd. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning. This is Xiaoning and I'm here with Roshan, who is beaming in from an undisclosed location in Petaling Jaya. And of course, this is the morning run. And that song was The Money, well, just Money by The Drums, which is something we all need. Not the drums, but more the money, I guess.
I want those drums that make money, Xiaoning. That sounds... Yeah, money by the drums.
Money by the drums. But so far this morning, we've had some interesting conversations asking you whether you might take the vaccine if you saw your favorite star or your influencer taking it. Would that help you make up your mind? And also, realistically, what do you want to give or what do you want to leave behind in 2020 after a rather exhausting year? But now we are looking at some headlines around the world. What do we have first off, Roshan?
Well, we're starting with the fact that travel bans, Xiaoning, are making a comeback in some countries.
Did they ever go away? I'm curious. Did I miss that memo?
Okay, they're making a bigger comeback than they were. So like for us in Malaysia, we still had those travel bans. But in the UK and in Europe, you started seeing a lot more lightening of these things, right? But now with the UK variant of the virus, a lot of countries are taking actions to halt the spread by essentially travel bans to the UK. So many countries in the EU have unilaterally imposed travel restrictions to and from the UK, and this includes stopping flights. France has suspended all travel links to the UK for 48 hours from Sunday, including freight lorries. Thousands of lorries move between the countries every single day, right? And this shows you the interconnectivity of the EU region. And that's why it's always such a struggle to impose these kind of travel bans. And the fact that they did this so quickly, I guess, shows that they're taking this variant quite seriously.
Yeah, so outside of the EU, Canada, Russia and India have actually also suspended flights from the UK for a certain period of time, ranging from 72 hours to until the end of the year. Saudi Arabia, Oman, Kuwait went even further, closing their borders completely for a week. Now, of course, this travel ban poses a headache for travellers and governments alike, especially in the UK, but also for its economic partners. Now, so the patchwork of different measures taken by EU member countries has raised calls for a more coordinated approach. So Boris Johnson, UK's Prime Minister, has spoken with French President Emmanuel Macron, who, by the way, has had COVID-19 or is having COVID-19, and said that he's hopeful that progress will be made to allow for freight travel to resume. Because when you think about it, right, UK and Europe, they depend on each other, especially UK, a lot for their fresh food. A lot of things are imported in from the EU. And if the lorries are being stuck in the, you know, the Channel Tunnel, does this mean that UK might be suffering from some shortages or price increases going forward? And before I don't want to be the bad bearer of news, but aren't they supposed to also still continue with their Brexit negotiations and the clock is ticking away? So it doesn't even mean that Brexit is over. The goods are already stuck due to this new variant labelled as B.1.1.7. And it's said this new variant is said to be up to 70% more transmittable. But there is no evidence that it is more deadly, and there is no proof at this current moment to suggest that it reacts differently to vaccines. So fingers crossed though.
Yeah, I mean, Xiaoning, the analogy you gave us yesterday that you heard, where it's basically like if your friend wears a cap, you can still identify the friend, right? Maybe the friend grows a beard and wears a cap, a bit more harder, but you can still recognize the friend. So unless the virus goes through plastic surgery, i.e. mutation, the vaccine should still be able to identify the virus. And at least that's what, at least what the literature is showing us at this point. But also, closer to home, when we take a look at the vaccine news, the vaccine has arrived on the shores of Singapore down south. Singapore received its first shipment of the COVID-19 vaccine, and this was yesterday. And this was according to a statement from DHL. Now, DHL didn't state which pharmaceutical company provided the vaccine, but I guess we can make an educated guess, right? Or at least right now, which are the main candidates that are distributing the vaccine across the world? And Shannon, you actually spoke to the global CEO for DHL Express a few weeks ago, and they were really proud, or at least very... let's just say enthusiastic about the fact that they were making these deliveries, right?
Yeah, it was a conversation with John Pearson, global CEO. And I asked him point blank, is he going to make more money as a result of this? Is he going to charge more? And he said, no, we are going to charge what we always charge. We're not going to make super normal profits as a result of this. But they did say that they are looking forward to the being part of this global distribution rollout. Although they admit it's going to be a bit of a logistic issue, right? Because we do know, especially for one of the vaccines, you need temperatures below minus 70, which is like Antarctic kind of levels of coldness. It's not going to be easy to do it, because also you need that kind of storage facilities. Then there's subsequently after that, the logistic roll out to every single person. But Singapore, tiny nation, 5.5 million people, probably they have less of a challenge. But I think they'll be a good example of how things, if it's done correctly, probably can be done, replicated across the world though.
Yeah, I think Singapore has set aside $1 billion for vaccines, and that should be enough for the 5.5 million population that they've got. And I think they're aiming to get this, the vaccinations done, or at least get most of them vaccinated by the third quarter, which is a very strong logistical move, right? So this is going to be interesting to pay attention to in the region.
Yeah, we're going to monitor each country carefully and maybe learn from them as to how it should be done even here. So let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. But we'll be back after these messages. Now, don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Wong Xiaoning with Roshan Gunnison, and of course, this is The Morning Run. It has just gone past 6:50 in the morning. It's a lovely Tuesday, 22nd of December, and that was You Can't Do That by The Beatles, and that refers to not physically distancing, not wearing your mask, and not washing your hand. As you can see, today is the COVID-19 warning day. But in the meantime, we're taking a look at some of the local news stories this morning. And first off is the Malaysian Reserve in front of me. And I want to refer to the news that Tunku Anan, who was convicted yesterday, he was sentenced to 12 months in prison. Imprisonment and given a 2 million ringgit fine. But of course, this is pending appeal, so he's allowed to move freely. And he was yesterday found guilty at the KL High Court for accepting 2 million graft under his capacity as a minister from property developer Asset Kaya Mas in 2016. And just to, if I'm not wrong, the day before his son had a very unusual wedding, right? It was a drive-through wedding for 10,000 guests in Putrajaya. So anyway, I think at the moment, if the conviction passes, he will, of course, he's not the first high-ranking public servant and politician to be charged and convicted under this penal code, even though it was Tunku Anan's first offence. So we'll be following this story and his appeal. Because I think if it happens, he's then not allowed to stand for Putrajaya at the next elections then, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's why they were asking for a sentence with a fine less of 2,000 ringgit. If it's above 2,000 ringgit, then you can't stand it. That's I think something they were trying to aim for, but they got a fine that was a 100 times more?
Yeah.
1,000 times more? I'm sorry, my math isn't working this morning, but it's several factors larger than what they were trying to get there. But this was interesting because he obviously had a very interesting weekend celebrating his son's wedding, as you should, and then on Monday morning being told that
his birthday, by the way. Yesterday,
coincided
with his birthday, 70th birthday present from the courts.
In any case, Sharon, we've been talking a lot about vaccines, and there seems to be a little bit of a back and forth between Khairi Jamaluddin and Lim Kit Siang, because I think Lim Kit Siang was questioning how much we're paying for the Pfizer vaccine, and based on some claim that, based on some information out of Belgium, on the comparative prices that they were paying, Kitian was of the impression that we were paying about 70% more. But this was reneged by Khairi Jamaluddin, who said that that's not the case, right? That essentially 3 billion ringgit has been allocated for the total the the total money spent on the vaccine overall. But that doesn't mean that the, but they, I don't think they can disclose the prices, because even when the Belgium Secretary of State mentioned it was an accident, right? Because normally these deals that they strike with the vaccine companies are confidential in nature, because of the it's not a block deal. They're doing individual deals with different countries, and basically I think everyone's just trying to get the best deals from themselves, lah.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, I want to highlight the Sage Daily, the CEO brief, because the headline is very catchy, and it's Malaysia needs 90 to 120 days just to check Pfizer vaccine, question mark. Are you kidding, DG, question mark? Because I think our process seems to be rather long compared to countries like Britain, US and Canada, which have already approved the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine and are already carrying out vaccination exercises on their citizens. So it looks like we Malaysians will have to wait a few more months before anyone can get their shots. And in the meantime, like we talked about it, Singapore has got theirs already, including the European Union, who approved the vaccine for use. So I suppose the question is, why are we taking much longer? Why do we have five phases, which will take up to 90 to 100 days to scrutinize everything? So there are some question marks there. Yeah, and this is something the Edge Daily is asking.
And speaking of taking time, Xiaoning, do you remember Muda, the Syed Saddiq party?
Yes.
That's just about to be, but not yet be.
Because
the ROS is taking their sweet, sweet time with the registration. So they've taken legal action, right? So they've sent a lawyer's letter over to the Registrar of Societies. And essentially, long story short, is saying, listen, here, we're giving you 7 days to sort this out before we take legal action, right? Before they take it to the courts. And they've gotten some heavy hitters on their side. Mm. Tommy Thomas and Ambiga are the counsel, or at least Tommy Thomas's legal law firm is the one representing them here. And essentially, Syed Saddiq was giving some comparisons, right? How long it took other parties to be registered. So something like Bersatu was registered within 30 days. And that was during the Barisan National era when Dato Sri Najib Razak and was the Prime Minister, right? So, but it's now been 90 days since Syed Saddiq registered Muda. So I guess there are a lot of questions coming up from here, and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, because this is where, I mean, why, I guess the question is, why is this taking so long?
Yeah. I asked him that on the breakfast grill, actually, whether he would face delays. And yeah, at that time, he seemed rather confident that it will happen. But like in Malaysia, we need 90 to 100 days for a vaccine. So maybe that's why everything's a bit slower. But very quickly, people are flocking to EPF offices seeking information on ICNR. And this is on page 2 of the Star. And apparently there was a queue in Shah Alam, stretch over 100 meters as applications physically distance themselves and adhere to SOPs to try and get more info. Maybe it's indication of how bad things are perhaps out there in terms of people needing money to help them tide themselves through this difficult time. But do let us know what you think, because, you know, are you going to take ICNR? I'm curious about that. But that's all from the local papers this morning. Coming up next is the 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP, to find out where global markets are heading. But first, here's the talk of the town by the Pretenders. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.